Mini episode 452 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by The Unheard Scene, your home for great music interviews of all stripes. Follow them on the web at unheardscene.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Okay, everybody, welcome back to the FDH Lounge. Rick Morris and Steve Callis, your FDH Lounge dignitaries today in residence. This is the second year in a row that Steve is joining me to break down the MLB Top 30. This is our annual ranking of players in Major League Baseball. We've been doing this since 2012, but this is the second year that we've made a show segment out of it. The top 30 players in the game presently, to our estimation, with me being the final curator of the list, that is, but essentially, if you were starting a team today for 162 games in front of you, so there will be some guys where injuries will be a factor in terms of either them not being on the list or in terms of them being a little bit lower than they would be otherwise. But it was a lot of fun to break down last year, and looking forward to it again. Thank you so much, Steve, for being a part of this 2 years in a row critiquing our list.
Great to be with you, Rick. This is a lot of fun. I can't wait to get started.
This is going to be tremendous. I have a few rough notes to start with before we really get into this. Of course, this is the fourth of the major sports ones that we have recorded and put up this year. The previous ones being, of course, the NHL Top 30, recorded that with Russ Cohen. That one seemed pretty straightforward. NBA Top 30 with Ben Chu, again, pretty straightforward. And you actually kind of have to stretch to get to 30 in terms of difference makers. NFL Top 32 with Jason Jones, we did 32 there because 32 teams in the NFL. We're just averaging one player per team in a league. That one was brutal. That might have been the toughest one because of the number of positions. But this one, Steve, this is super challenging as well. It's the only one of the four that we're doing in season. There's a little bit of apples and oranges again, maybe not quite to the degree of the NFL, but as far as how we compare players to one another, this one is really anything but easy.
Yeah, but I think it's going to be a lot of fun, and this is, you know, what makes the world go around. You love comparing what you think, what I think, what the fans think. It's really interesting stuff.
It really is. Looking back at the 3 years that we've done this, 2012, there were 17 hitters on the list, 12 starting pitchers, one closer. 2013, 15 hitters, 13 starting pitchers, 2 closers. This year, 15 hitters, 11 starting pitchers, 4 closers. It's a good year for closers. Houston Street was actually on the bubble. We could have had 5 guys in there. So what made me check this was, again, many, many thanks to the FDH Director of Research, Nate Noy, for bouncing some ideas off of me, for helping me refine the list. There are two guys specifically that are on the list because he put enough of a bug in my ear about that. He thought that perhaps we had more starting pitchers this year than in the past because it's been such a strong year for that. But I think what we're going to find, Steve, is while there's not more starting pitchers than the last couple of years, they dominate the upper echelon of the list because it's been the year of the ace pitcher.
No question. And Kershaw is at the top of that list, and I'm sure he's number one on your list.
Yes, he is very high on there. Spoiler alert. A couple of notes here also before we get started. Josh Hamilton at number one in 2012, number 30 last year. He becomes the first one-time number one to fall off of the list altogether. He has that distinction. And in terms of turnover, top four players from 2012 are all off the list this year. Hamilton, Matt Kemp, Justin Verlander, and Joey Votto. All of them returned in 2013. Prior to this year, Troy Tulowitzki at number 15 in 2012. He was the highest to fall off of the list the next year. This year, that record is tied by one because number 15 from last year falls off the list and broken by six. We have 6 players higher than number 15 last year who are not on the list this year. And in terms of continuity, 11 players made it in 2012 and 2013, but not this year. 8 players have made it 2 of the 3 years. 9 players have made the list every year. And there are 14 players returning to the list from 2013. In 2013, 20 players returned. So not even half the list coming back. 14 out of 30, Steve. We have tremendous turnover. Here's the guys that didn't make it that were on the list last year and some very high ones on there. Keeping in mind, by the way, also, we did this in May of last year, so it's a little more than a year. We're talking more like 14, 15 months, so take that into consideration as well, folks. But Justin Verlander, number 3 last year, does not make it. Bryce Harper, 6. Joey Votto, 7. Mariano Rivera, 9. I don't think he's going to be returning anytime soon. Prince Fielder, 10. Carlos Gonzalez, 14. Justin Upton, 15. Steven Strasburg, 16. Matt Harvey, 19. I think those last four guys will probably be back on there, but they weren't this year, and Harvey, of course, is down. Cliff Lee at 20. Jared Weaver, 22. Evan Longoria, 23. Matt Cain, 24. Matt Kemp, 27. Albert Pujols, 28. Josh Hamilton, 30. Not making it, and out of all of those, I'd have to say Albert Pujols might have even been the only bubble guy of the bunch, Steve.
Yeah, I have to agree. I mean, this is an interesting list, but hard to debate. Many of them, as you know, down by injury, so again, it's hard to quarrel with that. Verlander, as you know, his velocity has gone down every year now for the last 3 years. I saw him pitch last week against the Yankees, and he pitched well, but he's not Justin Verlander. He is just not dominant. They talk about throwing three Cy Young Award winners in a row now, which they did last week at Yankee Stadium with Scherzer, Price, Verlander. Verlander is a distant three on that list, and in fact, Rick Porcello, who pitched the fourth game, is certainly ahead of Verlander this year on the Tigers, never mind in the league. So I did think the only person I had any issue with, and you already mentioned him, Albert Pujols, has kind of made a comeback from where he was last year.
Yeah,
I thought, because he played poorly. You had him early in the year on the list, but just barely, correctly so. This year he's 21 homers, 70 RBIs, 275 average, which in the old days was un-Pujols-like, but in the new days is kind of his average. But he's got 21-70 in 113 games. That's going to make him a 300 guy, probably plus 30, plus 100. So I think he'd be the only one for all, but even if you put him back in, he'd probably be where you had him for, like 28, 30.
Exactly, and to paraphrase former Vice President Dick Cheney, this is the new normal for Albert Pujols. This is where he's going to be, it looks like, for the remainder of his career, until it keeps going down subsequently, of course. But again, he was on the bubble. Not many of these other guys were, but it's a very good point also about Justin Verlander in terms of this whole gaga about three Cy Young winners. That's a technicality in terms of truth. That's like pointing to the credentials of the 1987 Indians pitching staff when they had Steve Carlton and Phil Niekro, you know, at the end of their careers. I mean, Justin Verlander might find that a little unfair, but yeah, it's, you know, a technicality, I think we would all say. Before we delve into the list, and the third tier of this thing takes up 13 to 30, so we're going to cut that roughly in half and go 30 up to 21. Before we do that, there's some guys, all of whom were on the bubble. You mentioned to me off air that you thought had a very good case for being on this list.
Well, the guys I would talk about, and I think the one glaring omission, the ones we can debate, but I think the one glaring omission was Max Scherzer. If we're looking at him from the 2014 and prior a little bit, I understand your criteria and his prior years as well. Scherzer won the Cy Young Award last year, 21-3, 2.90 ERA. This year, he's right back in the mix, 2014, 13-4, 3.24. I recently saw him pitch against the Yankees, didn't have his good stuff, wound up losing a 2-1 decision, which is unusual to hold the Tigers to one run, and last year he would have won that game.
Yeah.
As the Tigers offense, I thought, was better last year. But Scherzer, I thought, was the one guy who, in my opinion, wouldn't sneak in the high 20s or number 30. You could talk about him being maybe even the bottom of the second tier. Certainly, I thought, at the top of the third tier, because he has a chance. He's in the mix this year for Cy Young as well. Back-to-back Cy Youngs would be pretty impressive.
Yes.
But Scherzer's a real battler as well, and I love the way he competes.
He is. He's a very substantial pitcher, having turned the corner last year, having largely sustained it this year, not completely at the pace of last year's numbers, but I hear you on that one. He was a tough cut, and again, there were a couple of guys who just barely missed it, and I mentioned before that FDH Director of Research, Nate Noy, it was pretty instrumental in two guys making this list that weren't there otherwise, so there were a couple of guys that I ended up bumping late that I felt pretty strongly about. Garrett Richards came very close to making this list, and he did not. We already mentioned Albert Pujols being on the bubble before, and Anthony Rizzo is another guy who was really close, who was right there, as well as Jose Bautista. That's a guy that I really could have made a case for, and he didn't quite make it. But while that was the biggest one with you with Scherzer, I know that wasn't the only one.
Well,
you wondered
just
about
a few others, and again, you know, you could have made this list 40 even, and you still would have had really top players. But, and I understand injury is a part of the whole list as well. I think I still would have put, even though he's out now, Yadier Molina, you know, fourth in the MVP balloting 2012 when he hit 315 and is a great defensive catcher. Third in the MVP balloting last year when he hit 319. Even this year, only hitting 287 and injured now. He still has thrown out this year 17 of 35 runners, 49%. Those are video game numbers, catchers. And his lifetime throwout percentage of Steelers is 45%. These are unfathomable. You can add two catchers or even three catchers, not getting close to 49%.
Right.
So So Molina, although you're correct, he's out 8 to 12 weeks with that thumb. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately for him, it's his right thumb, which is a throwing thumb.
Sure.
So I don't know if he's coming back. But I probably might have, even with the injury, snuck him in low.
Okay.
But snuck him in.
Okay.
The other one, of course, Nelson Cruz, the DH. I don't know if there was a 50-game suspension last year penalty for him this year. But interestingly, he's now played a similar number of games. Whereas Texas last year was intelligent enough to sign a one-year deal in Baltimore because he knew his numbers were going to be big. Last year, 27 homers, 76 RBIs. And again, he missed 50 games because of the suspension. This year, 29 homers, 77 RBIs in 103 games. Last year, he played 109 because of the suspension. Mm-hmm. So he didn't break the list, but he's more than happy to cash a big contract next year because he's going to get one based on his performance. And as we both know, a friendly hitter's ballpark.
Yeah.
He hit the jackpot, and I think he knew. That's why, you know, in New York, they wanted the Mets to sign him. A, he's not playing. Look what Citi Field's done to David Wright.
Right.
There's no way he's playing in Citi Field. B, he'll play for $8 million in Baltimore. Met fans don't understand you're not playing for $8 million in Citi Field. You would have had to have paid a lot more. Cruz made the right move. It's vaulted Baltimore to the top of the AL East, and there it looks like they're going to stay there now. I would mention one other name, Yankee guy. I got to throw one Yankee in. There's no Yankee in the top 30, and I grudgingly will agree. But I do have to mention Dellin Betances. I was very sorry the nation didn't get to see him pitch in the All-Star game. He was on the All-Star team but didn't pitch. This year, the numbers are video game numbers. 51 games, 4-0, 1.44 ERA. He's basically, as you know, a setup guy. He's the Mariano Rivera from 1996 to Wetland. That's what they're calling him in New York. He's Dellin Betances to David Robertson. But 68.2 innings, Rick, 31 hits, 102 strikeouts, 0.743 whip. Again, those numbers are hard to believe. You should try and watch him pitch. 6'8", 260, throws 98, and has a good hook.
He's absolutely amazing. And, yeah, if we had room on this list for a setup guy, that he clearly would have been that. He definitely is deserving, at the very least, of being on the bubble for this list. You're absolutely right about him. And as regards Nelson Cruz, again, on the bubble, and it's funny, I mentioned to you, I started making out this list in May, have played with it on and off through the summer, and subsequently there were just some guys who dropped off through the course of time. And as he kind of tailed off a little bit since that red hot start, and specifically since the All-Star break, that is what mitigated against him in my book, was the sense that the best of his production from this past year very possibly was behind him. So on the whole thing of starting a 162 game season and starting a team, is that a guy you would necessarily go with? It reminds me, last year in fantasy baseball, one of my league mates was trying to trade me Michael Kadire after he had already put in that explosive start and all the way up through, I think, August, and then he was already kind of starting to tail off in Colorado. And my sense was, gee, do I want to trade for what he's going to do the rest of the way? And I guess that's kind of how I looked at it with Nelson Cruz. He definitely has the best numbers of any hitter not on this list. We can agree on that. But the list itself, going from 30 to 21, we will stop roughly halfway through the third tier and kind of give a chance to talk about this a little bit. At number 30, Jose Altuve, who is one of the two guys that Nate Noy, as I mentioned before, had really recommended to me. I'm not much of a slappy guy in general, I have to say. I've got a little bit of a bias against guys who are not really run producers, but when you look at the combination of the batting average, the stolen bases, what kind of a table setter he's been, how he's been playing defensively for Houston, that did it in my book. He makes the list. He was not on from last year. Greg Holland at number 29, having another great season for the Royals. He was not on the list last year. 28 is an interesting case. Robinson Cano, he was 27th on the list 2 years ago, 11th this past year in 2013. I know that's a guy we're going to talk about a little bit. He's had a little bit of the power drop-off as expected this year at Safeco Field, although, as you pointed out to me off here, still producing every bit as strong in areas aside from that as you might expect, and still being quite a catalyst in that lineup. Number 27, Adam Jones, he cracks the list for the first year, and this is somebody who, again, is benefiting, I think, offensively and defensively in terms of our consideration. He's a very well-rounded player, and since this is not a fantasy list, that's a guy where the defense works in his favor. To an extent, also, number 26, Carlos Gomez. I talked about Altuve at 30, and he's a little bit unbalanced. He's a speed guy. Gomez is kind of more the kind of guy who, you know, quite frankly, in terms of my personal bias, I lean towards. He's got power. He's got speed. He's a well-rounded player. Number 25, Ryan Braun. He was fourth last year, third the year after. We see now the effect of post-steroid suspension with him, his numbers have been off this year. So for anybody who really wondered what he was going to be like when he was quote-unquote completely clean, and you can never be too sure with this guy, if he is clean, I'm tempted to believe he is clean because the numbers are a little bit off of last year. Still a very talented guy. He makes the list just barely sort of at 25. At 24, Buster Posey, down from 17 last year. That's a guy where, again, he is the only catcher who's on the list, and it's interesting that we talked before about Yadier Molina not making it. Devin Mesoraco, based purely on what he's done this year, is a guy that you would expect to be right there. Don Gomes of the Cleveland Indians, believe it or not, has had numbers startlingly similar to Buster Posey at this point in time. My sense on leaving Posey on the list, also factoring in with how he handles the starting pitching in San Francisco, is that it's a little bit of a King of the Hill situation. If it's two-thirds of a season of Devin Mesoraco, we're only into the second year of Yan Gomes as a full-time starter, Buster Posey to me, getting the benefit of the doubt, as would Yadier Molina on the list if he were healthy. Number 23, John Lester. He was not on the list last year, and frankly, wasn't on the list when I started making it up earlier this summer, but has come on much better as the summer has gone along. Number 22, Cole Hamels, one of the three most consistent guys through the 3 years as far as the list goes. 25 last year, 22 in 2012, and I should stipulate, because I haven't already today, I don't look at the past lists when I'm making out this year's list. Every year independently, that's where I've slotted them. It just so happens that it turned out to be that. Number 21, Adrian Beltre, one of three guys who was on the list in 2012 at number 20, dropped off the list last year. He was kind of a bubble guy then, back on the list this year at number 21. So going from 30 to 21, Altuve, Holland, Cano, Adam Jones, Carlos Gomez, Braun, Posey, Lester, Hamels, and Beltre. Tee off on anything you find notable, Steve.
Yeah, well, I do like the little guy, Jose Altuve, only 5'6". I think the list as is, these guys are third-tier guys. I think Altuve and Robinson Cano should be higher, but still on the third tier. We'll get to a couple guys earlier in the third tier that I think should be in the second tier. But Altuve, an all-star two of the last 3 years, 333, you know, second only to Cano in batting. He leads the league with 45 stolen bases. That's not even the whole story. Last year, Altuve was 35 for 48 in stolen bases. Not exactly fantastic. Not bad, but not fantastic. This year, though, 45-51, almost 90% success rate. That is fantastic.
Yeah.
So he's not only improved hitting-wise, but as a base stealer, and that's his game because you correctly point out he's not a power guy.
Mm-hmm.
But I kind of like these little guys who slap and go. He also has 158 hits in 113 games, so he's well on his way to a 200-hit season.
Yeah.
And I think that's phenomenal in today's games because these guys don't even play enough games to get 200 hits.
Right.
And when we talk about guys who play a lot of games, look, I saw Robinson Cano all those years in New York. He was fantastic. I saw him do things other second basemen can't do. Big debate, is Pedroia better than Cano? Defensively, I don't think so. I love Pedroia. He gets his uniform dirty, but Cano has the best arm of any second baseman because he used to be a shortstop.
Mm-hmm.
He makes that play behind second look so easy,
yeah.
And most second basemen can't even make the throw. In addition, I saw him catch a fly ball last year, and I swear it was a fly ball to right center against the Red Sox in Fenway, and Cano went back and caught it. It was the most amazing thing I've seen, only because you don't even see second base get out that far, and he wasn't playing back a shift or anything.
Mm-hmm.
So this year, Cano, 100% right. His power numbers are down. He had 9 homers and 64 home run RBIs after 110. You're right, they're down. But his career 311 average and 59 OBP in Seattle has become 335, 401.
Yeah.
Those are huge improvements in both numbers. And I think, as important, hard to judge, but many people, when Cano was traded, said, oh, yeah, Seattle's got him. They need 2 or 3 more guys. Meanwhile, Cano has been the leader. I won't say single-handedly, but he's been the leader in making that team probable wild card. Certainly a wild card.
Yeah.
And nobody thought that if you go back and look at the predictions
right.
At the beginning of the year. So I think those two guys could be higher. The other picks, I can't quarrel. Jones, of course, having a great year. Carlos Gomez. I really don't like Ryan Braun, what he did, and it's off the field.
Mm-hmm.
What he did to that urine collector was
yeah.
a disgrace. But you're right. Everyone is now thinking what you said.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what happened to this guy's numbers? It can only be one thing. So
yeah.
Does he deserve to be on the list based on numbers? Absolutely. You'd almost think there would be some kind of penalty. And I think he's getting the penalty around the league. And of all the steroids guys, you could argue he's the worst.
Yeah.
He tried to destroy a man's life and it got him fired from his job, certainly. And I thought that was a disgrace. The only other guy I'll talk about on this, 21 to 30, is John Lester. Maybe a little higher. He seamlessly made the transition from last place Boston Red Sox teams to first place Oakland. If Oakland doesn't win at all, I don't think they're winning it. And when we talk about Moneyball, and we've talked about this before, Moneyball, back when the book was written, they seemed to forget that they had guys like, you know, Zito, Mulder,
yes.
Tim Hudson.
Yeah,
and
I didn't see anything about them in the movie.
Right, and if they win this year, they're going to say Moneyball, 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 but it's going to be Smarja coming over, mm-hmm. Lester, Asmir, Sonny Gray. As usual, you can look at all the statistics you want at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. It's usually pitching. So Lester is going to lead that staff. He's won a World Series there, and he's been an ace for a long time. So Lester may be a little higher. He's made the transition seamlessly to Oakland, and I'll say it again, they don't win it this year. I don't think they're going to win it. I think Lester's on. He's a 2-month rental,
mm-hmm.
and he's already said he'd almost like to sign with Boston. I don't think Boston give him money,
right.
But I would put Lester up a little higher, and he might lead them to the promised land, and that's what they're looking for.
Very possibly, yeah. He has proven through the course of this year that he is a legitimate ace pitcher, and again, has a world championship on his pedigree from, as recently as last year. So, yeah, he's a very deserving guy of being on the list. Let's take a look at the rest of the third tier. This is 20 to 13, which is where the cutoff is. At number 20, making his first appearance on the list ever, somebody I told you off air that I was quite startled that I would end up putting on the list, and one of the most surprising guys from the standpoint of the beginning of the season. But Corey Kluber taking a jump from being about a number three pitcher, maybe number two on some teams based on what he did last year, to a legitimate, bona fide, no question about it, ace at number 20 on the list here. Number 19, he was not on the list last year and would be an ace on most other teams in baseball, but since he pitches with Clayton Kershaw, that's not the case. Zach Greinke, if there's a better number two pitcher in baseball, I'd like to see him, quite frankly. Number 18, David Price. Actually, and some might say he might be, if you consider Scherzer still to be the ace in Detroit there. David Price, coincidentally, 18 the year before. And as I say, I didn't look at the 2013 list when making this one out. It just so happens he slotted in the same place year to year. Number 17, Sean Doolittle. This is the other guy that Nate Noy had urged me to take a look at, and I did, and I inserted him on the list, and again, well above 30. Just an amazing year for a closer. Has done a tremendous job in Oakland, and when we speak of the pitching and everything that has worked in their favor there, let us not forget the bullpen. Let us not forget the ninth inning, the way that he has stepped in for the disappointing Jim Johnson and had a season the likes of which I don't think any of us could have anticipated. Number 16, staying in California, Yasiel Puig, making his first time on the list. Again, we did this earlier in the season last year. So doing this in May, it would have been a little bit early to include him. I think had we done it later in the season, he clearly would have made the list. Number 15, Yu Darvish. He was 26th the year before. He has fallen off a little bit from what he's done last year. And again, he was 26th early last season. It's funny because, again, he would have been probably even higher than 15 if we did this at this point in the season last year. So the 15 actually, in a way, probably represents a slight regression from where he was at this point last year. But still, a legitimate ace pitcher, no question about it. He is not to blame for what's happening to Texas this year, same as Adrian Beltre, who's also on the list. Number 14, Paul Goldschmidt. These next two are very interesting because they were both second-tier guys who we have lower because of the injury. Now, Goldschmidt won't play again in 2014, but that's more or less a babying-type situation of why throw him back in there for a suck team in September. He legitimately could be back in early to mid-September based on the normal healing time frame. So looking at this, he would miss the first several weeks of the season if you were starting a team to play 162 games. So 14 is sort of the balancing point of where we put him, a second-tier guy who's on the third tier because of that. And to an extent, although he will miss less time than that, he is most of the way through his rehab, but there always seem to be questions popping up every year. You know you're not going to get him for 162 games. Last year was the donut because he was 15th in 2012. He missed the list last year, 13th this year. Troy Tulowitzki. And somebody who, again, was sniffing the top five earlier this season. And if this were the rare year where he were playing straight through, I think it would be reasonable to say we might be talking about him as a 4, 5, or 6 guy. But given that he would miss a little bit of time still from the date that we are recording this, that's why he misses the second tier and drops to the third tier, which I know is somewhat of a point of contention with you, Steve.
Yeah, just a few things on three players here. Corey Kluber, I saw him recently dominate the Yankees. It was scary how good he's become. He's 12-6 with a 2.55 ERA. But what was interesting in that game, he was covering first base, and it wound up that Santana made a big diving play on Jeter. Santana ran back to the base and slid into first to Jeter. And when Kluber, you couldn't tell at the time, but when Kluber pulled up, it looked like something had happened. A couple of pitches later, everybody was coming out to the mound, and the Indians, I was watching with the Indians announcer talking, and they were like, oh my God, season's over if this guy kind of gets hard because they do have playoff hopes, of course. And, you know, Francona, I think, is a great manager. Got them there last year, at least the playoff game. But Kluber has really become an ace, and I think maybe higher next year at this time if we do this. And the other guy, Puig, I've loved Puig since he came up. You're right. If you had done this in even July, never mind August, I think he would have been on the list. He had that. I was 44 for 100. No tomato had done that.
Yeah.
But you're right. He wasn't even in the league in April. Hey, I remember writing an article. He should have been an all-star last year.
And I agreed with that.
And that was just terrible to say. If you do what he did for a month, 44 for 100, it's unfathomable.
Yeah.
And I say it's unfathomable because in the history of baseball, only Joe DiMaggio had done four.
Right.
So if you're on the list with DiMaggio and only been there for 100 at-bats, and he was still really good after that.
Sure.
So I think
as
Puig,
a rookie.
Right. I think Puig gets his just due now. He does make some blunders once in a while. Most of them are out of trying too hard.
Mm-hmm.
But he is immensely talented, a five-tool player, built like a fullback, runs like a deer, has a Clemente remaining arm, and I never really say that about anyone, but he and Cespedes have Clemente-type arms. It really is amazing. But Puig is where he should be and would have been on it last year. The only other thing I did want to say about Tulowitzki, I understand you dropped him to the third tier because of injury, but his number is still leading the league. He's not going to have enough at-bats. He's only played 91 games. But 340, 432 OBP, 603 slugging, he's over 1,000 for his OPS. I mean, those are stunning numbers. Mm-hmm. And in the category of looking back a little, he's been an all-star four of the last 5 years. You were right, obviously, about last year.
Mm-hmm.
So 21 homers and 52 RBIs in 91 games. I would have probably snuck him into the 9, 10, 11, but maybe that's just being a little picky because the second tier and the third tier is so close. He's number one. You have him number one and Goldschmidt number two in the third tier and for obvious.
Yes, and they definitely would be on the second tier. And both of them at least borderline top five in my estimation if there weren't any problems with them as far as injuries presently. The second tier, this is where we really start to delve into the franchise players in baseball as they are presently constituted. And again, that's not something that we throw around lightly when we say that. Number 12, Adam Wainwright. He was number 29 last year on the list. Number 11, Andrew McCutchen. This is another of our three very consistent guys. He was 12th last year, 10th the year before. My note that I have for him is consistent but different circumstances. And that is, again, he, like Puig, suffered for the fact that we did this in May last year because his real breakthrough came a little bit later. So he's a guy who would have been, probably, again, at least borderline top five were that not the case. And again, this year as well, a guy who could have been a little bit higher. It hasn't exactly been a repeat of last year for him. But again, he is still having a very good year for Pittsburgh. And if they make the playoffs, will be an MVP candidate. Number 10, Koji Uehara. Taking into account what he did this year and last year, again, this being when it was earlier last season, he did not make our list last year, but it's just had an amazing run through his 2 years as Boston closer. Number 9, Jose Abreu, our highest rookie on the list, or quote-unquote rookie as an international player. And so, again, obviously he was not on it last year. Craig Kimbrell at number 8. He was 13th last year, 13th the year before. Another pretty consistent guy on the list here, and in my estimation, the guy who has taken the mantle from Mariano Rivera as far as he's not necessarily the best closer this year when you look at the numbers. You have the aforementioned Sean Doolittle and some other guys in there, but big picture at any moment in baseball, Mariano Rivera generally felt like the best closer for a long stretch of time, and I think over the last 3 years, Craig Kimbrell has generally felt like the best closer in baseball, regardless of some blips in the short term. Number 7, Giancarlo Stanton, our highest debut on the list this year. He was not on it last year. It just an amazing combination of power and of good contact. It's the kind of thing that was really not so rare, quite frankly, during the steroid era. And my partner and I, with our team every year that we built, we would always in those years go for high average power hitters. They're kind of rare these days. And Stanton has really improved in his contact, and that is what has helped really kind of separate him from most of the other hitters in baseball. Number 6, Johnny Cueto, taking a step up this year. He was 21st last year, and he was 17th in 2012, so he's one of only the 9 players to have been on the list all 3 years. Number 5, Chris Sale, not on the list last year. This makes him the highest return to the list. Stanton, the highest debut. Sale, the highest return, as he was 16th in 2012. And at number 4, topping out the second tier, Felix Hernandez. He was 8th last year. When you're looking at the best pitchers in the American League, spoiler alert, there are no pitchers among the top 3 players on our list. Hernandez and Sale, I think a lot of people would probably agree, are 1-2 in whatever order, and as such, they round out the top of the second tier.
Yeah, just a few things. Adam Wainwright should be second tier. He should not have started the All-Star game. I understand Matheny had to take care of his own, but that proved to be a disaster for the National League. Oji Uehara, I think if you had done it later in the year, he really came to national attention. Mm-hmm. He had a great regular season, but no one noticed. But in the playoffs, he had three saves and a win against Detroit in the ALCS. He was the MVP of the ALCS. He had two saves against St. Louis in the World Series. He gave up no earned runs in those 10 games. So clearly he's climbed the ladder this year, 5-2 with a 1.37 ERA, 24 saves in 51 games. So he's maintained what he did. And again, I think it was more a timing thing that he wasn't on the list last year. Jose Abreu, you know, people are saying he's backing off. But, and you know, as a rookie, although as you pointed out, an international player, you expect these guys to get tired 110, 120, 130 games in. But while it's true he hasn't hit a home run in the last 10 games and only two in the last 20, his numbers of 31 homers and 86 RBIs are still amazing. But more interesting to me, his batting average in the last 15 games has actually gone up 12 points. That's pretty stunning accomplishment in the end of July into August. So, and he still leads the league in slugging percentage and OPS. So give him credit, although I still think he has a chance. I thought he had a good chance 20 games ago to beat Mark McGwire's 49 home run record with the A's. But he's still having an unbelievable year. And as you said, he's a rookie and to be top 10. The only other guy I would really talk about, King Felix, since he won that Cy Young at 13-12 and the Sabermetrics guys were thrilled back in 2010. His ERA was 2.27. Of course, that was one of the reasons. This year, he's got the numbers for everybody. 12-3 in 2014, a 1.97 ERA, lead the league, a 0.877 whip, leads the league. So whether you're a Sabermetrics guy or an old-time win-loss guy, and they're battling for a playoff spot, King Felix is, I think, live for another Cy Young Award this year and deserves to be number four on the list.
Yeah, he has been very, very strong this year. It has been his best year. And again, when they nickname you King Felix, when they say coming in, you know, you're like Dwight Gooden, if only Dwight Gooden could have sustained it and not self-destructed. This is what people were anticipating. They were really expecting it to be a year like this. But again, he has just been amazing. And it's funny, too, because again, Chris Sale, he's been strong the last couple of years. But again, this looks like the best we've seen out of him. It's the best out of Cueto, as is reflected by his position on the list here. A little bit lower on the tier, Adam Wainwright, but somebody who is still a fringe contender for the Cy Young if we're still talking about anybody other than Cueto and Kershaw. So, again, the year of the ace pitcher, and you're really seeing it reflected here with all these guys on the second tier, Steve, that, again, it's their the dominance as far as the positioning, and we've got one more yet to go out of the top three guys, but this really kind of gives you a sense of the climate of Major League Baseball this year. It's not only guys emerging, as we talked before about Corey Kluber, it's guys like Felix Hernandez that we're seeing maybe the best stuff out of them ever.
No question. He got that gigantic contract and deserved it, but you're right. At the end of the day, baseball was, is, and I think always will be about the pitching, and although I've recently written a column about maybe the six-man rotation coming to the New York Mets, I at least suggested that. I think these guys, their importance, I remember when it went from 4-5, and I thought, oh, you know, maybe the starting pitcher won't be as important. He's pitching one-fifth of the game instead of one-quarter of the game. In fact, they've become more important, and I think even if they go to a six-man rotation, you're still going to see these guys. Now, they're going to have to develop more pitchers. Many people will say, and have said to me, well, how can they go to a six-man rotation? Nobody has even five starters, and there's some truth to that. I think specifically the Mets, for another time, they have seven or eight starting pitchers next year.
Yeah,
I wrote they shouldn't trade Colon at the deadline, and they didn't. Not because he's pitching great, but because they're going to need a veteran leader. Harvey comes back healthy, I think they can make a run at the playoffs. I don't want to get off base. But
sure,
what we're talking about is the pitching, and clearly the Mets, just like in 69, Jim Cott told me when I interviewed him many years ago that it was the 69 Mets who went from 4-5 to protect a young Tom Seaver, a young Kuzman, a young Gary Gentry, a young part-time starter named Nolan Ryan. So I think, not that these guys are going to be Seaver, Kuzman, Gentry, and Ryan, but they have a chance. When you talk about Harvey already starting an All-Star game, he comes back from Tommy John surgery. So I think no matter how big the rotation is, I even wrote 40 or 50 years from now, I hope we're around to see it, might be, this guy's pitching every Wednesday, like in Japan, once a week. So no matter how many men in the rotation, the pitcher's still going to be the number one guy.
Well, yeah, and you're absolutely right. The Mets are a very good sort of case study microcosm for where baseball is right now, because I agree with you. They could be a wild card contender next year, even a fringe one perhaps. And again, because this lineup just sucks. It's a pathetic lineup. But, hey, they might win enough games, 1-0, 2-1, et cetera, to be in there. You can't rule them out with that kind of pitching. And as you said, they have better depth, especially with a healthy Matt Harvey next year, than most teams. It's a real indicator of where we're at, and we'll see where that guides us on the top tier here as far as whether it is in this year of the pitcher, whether a pitcher is number one. We have on the top tier with our last three guys to go, we have our two of our three all-time number ones. As mentioned previously, Josh Hamilton, number one in 2012, not on the list. But Miguel Cabrera was number one on the list in 2013. He was 11th in 2012. All three of these guys, by the way, it won't surprise you to know, have been on the list all 3 years. Cabrera jumping from 11 to 1 last year. He slides to 3 this year. He is having a good year for anyone not named Miguel Cabrera. He is coming off of two absolutely historic years, and as you pointed out to me off air, 2013 actually better statistically in a lot of ways than the Triple Crown year of 2012. There's been a little bit of a debate the last couple of years, really ever since Mike Trout emerged, who's better, Trout or Cabrera? This year, it's not really a debate. Better player at the moment, clearly in the eyes of most, is number two, Mike Trout. He was number five a year ago. He was 30th in 2012. So when we did this midsummer, he was still a rookie, but he was having the kind of season that demanded that he be on the list. That much was clear. And when you're talking about a guy who in his first year, the point of comparison was not to this guy's like Ken Griffey Jr. When people are hauling out the big cannon and saying this guy is reminiscent of Mickey Mantle, that really tells you all you need to know, because I don't know that I've ever heard that applied to anybody else. But he has really justified it through the 3 years and maybe been the best player in baseball collectively through the 3 years. Although the guy who's number one might have something to say about that as well. He was number five in 2012, number two last year. And again, one of our three most consistent guys in terms of placement from year to year to year, Clayton Kershaw, number one. In the year of the pitcher, he has been the best pitcher. He has had stretches this year that have just been really unbelievable. For the kind of career that he is having, it's really a mouthful to say 2014 may go down as his best. It's hard to imagine him actually doing much better in the years to come. He clearly has been the best pitcher in baseball. It was a real tough debate between him and Mike Trout. I went back and forth. Trout has had a few stretches here and there, as Nate Noy pointed out to me, a little bit less than optimal, but again, nothing that would put him lower than second on the list. But Kershaw has maybe just, everybody's got some holes in their game from time to time, a bad day here and there. Kershaw's just had less of them probably than Trout, and that's even taking into account once every 5 days that you have to kind of equalize for that. I will say, side note, it's a sign of the pathetic marketing of Major League Baseball that they did not have that Angels-Dodgers stretch occurring over a weekend, when you could have had a decent chance of having the Trout-Kershaw matchup, the first one ever, fall on a Saturday or a Sunday. There's no guarantee of it. Maybe it would have happened on a Friday and you couldn't have put it on national TV anyways. But that game should have been in the national spotlight. It would have been in any other sport. The top stars head-to-head in any of the other major sports in this country, and even whether or not people consider hockey to be that, I still do. That would be marketed big time. You can't get away from it whenever it's Ovechkin against Crosby or anything like that. This is baseball's version of it, and it happened before a handful of people in the Los Angeles area, and not even all of the people who wanted to see it on the Dodgers TV channel, since they're kind of blacked out locally due to some carriage issues. But that's a side note. I would have liked to have seen this clash of the Titans, the best two players in baseball. I think the consensus best hitter and best pitcher in baseball right now, and I guess that's my point, Steve, is that it's pretty rare when we're at a moment where you can say, this guy's the best hitter, this guy's the best pitcher. At the moment, I don't think anybody would question that. There are two guys that are in the same market, albeit for opposing leagues, franchises as well, but they're both in Southern California, and it's an amazing thing. I just wish more people in baseball were privy to this battle the past week.
Well, Major League Baseball obviously missed an opportunity. No shock there. They seem to somehow mess these things up. You know,
yep.
They put the World Series on when half the country is sleeping. I mean, it's just, it is the way it is, but I totally agree. This would not have been a big stretch to understand, especially, you know, the L.A. battle between the Angels and the Dodgers anyway. It would have been nice to see it nationally, and I totally agree. To see Kershaw against Trout is really an amazing matchup. I do agree with the order, 3-2-1, Cabrera, Trout, Kershaw. A few things on Cabrera, as you pointed out. The guy's been the top five in the MVP balloting 7 times in his career, and of course he's won the last two. But his Triple Crown 2012 year compared to 2013, same amount of home home runs in 2013, only two less RBIs, but 18 points higher in batting average than the Triple Crown year, 49 points higher in OBP than the Triple Crown year, 30 points higher in slugging than the Triple Crown year, and a whopping .079 higher in the OPS, staggering numbers. So I understand why he got the MVP over Trout, but I also understand the sabermetrics guys. This year, what you said for Cabrera, 306, 17 homers, 84 RBIs, those are good numbers, but not Cabrera numbers.
Right.
And his OPS is down 881, which that's why I agree Trout should be higher. Trout had incredible numbers his first 2 years, an all-star his first three full years, including this year. He's got 25 homers, 82 RBIs. Interestingly, he only has 12 stolen bases. So we're gonna, as you know, part of the argument for Trout over Cabrera, in 2012, he led the league in stolen bases with 49, last year 33. He might be already in the mode of trying to pack himself. He can still obviously steal a base, but when you talk about comparing him to Mickey Mantle, and I'm a Mantle guy, my idol when I was a little kid, and I agree with the comparisons. People forget how fast Mantle was. He was young, had a terrible knee injury his rookie year, and I remember many years later when they were talking about 40-40 being the most incredible thing in the history of the world, and Mantle, not even a braggart. Mantle really wasn't a braggart, but he said, you know, if I knew that, I would have 50. And if you knew his game, and I didn't see him, and he was really, really great, my father did, and he told me, oh, yeah, he could have.
Yeah.
The stolen base wasn't as emphasized. I will say the one guy I've heard compared to Mickey Mantle in the last 20 years, in addition to Trout, who at his best I agreed with, was Josh Hamilton those 2 or 3 years when he was off the charts. Now, you have to be that sweet swinging power hitter. Hamilton was for those few years, but I agree. If you just mention anyone, he's way, way up there. Kershaw, the consensus number one. I was fortunate enough, and maybe not fortunate now, old enough, to have seen Koufax pitch a number of times, not early 60s, but later on, just before he retired. My father used to take me to Shea and say, we're not going there to lose 100 games or more. We're going there to see Sandy Koufax, going there to see Willie Mays. We're going there to see Roberto Clemente. So I always thought and still think that Sandy Koufax was the greatest pitcher ever, period. Obviously, I can't speak to Lefty Grove and those guys, but certainly I think he's the greatest ever. And the interesting thing to me is that Kershaw, who has won 2 of 3 Cy Young Awards, and some people think it's a blasphemy, but they're starting to mention, no, the knock on Koufax was only really did it 5 or 6 years old, but they were like the greatest players in the history of baseball.
Yeah.
Kershaw with 2 of 3 Cy Young, certainly the leader now, Wainwright has dropped off a bit to win 3 of 4. Kershaw leading the league in ERA right now, 13-2 with a 1.82 ERA. If he leads the league this year, it'll be 4 in a row. I know Lefty Grove did that back in the 30s, but Koufax did it for those 5 years in a row. He led the league in ERA. So to me, you see where Kershaw is going. He's entering that territory. Now, he's going to have to do it for a few more years, but keep in mind, Koufax didn't, but he was an incredible super-duper star. He won 3 Cy Young Awards when they only gave out 1 Cy Young Award, and I believe at least in 2, maybe all 3, he was a unanimous Cy Young choice. So understand, back then, they only gave out 1.
Right.
So I think Kershaw is entering Koufax territory. Last year, his whip was 0.915. This year, it's 0.849, beating the league again. So if he does win again, he'll lead the league in whip 4 years ago, too. And these are just off the charts numbers. So I totally agree with Kershaw as number one, and I totally agree with the top three. I think overall, it's a fantastic list.
Well, thank you. And as far as the top three goes, again, we're not just talking at this point first ballot Hall of Famers. Again, all things being equal, assuming that the injuries do not derail them, injuries appear to be the only thing that possibly could, in the case of these three guys, from being, you talk about even first ballot Hall of Famers, the separator of, like, if there was one room of the most special players in there, if there was a wing for the best of the best, these are three guys who, all things being equal, look like they're headed for that. And it's very interesting to me that when guys get compared to other guys, we talked about it before, Albert Pujols, who at this point really compares only to Miguel Cabrera in terms of having a contract that's going to be a real albatross on the back end of it. But early on in Cabrera's career, people were comparing him to Albert Pujols. And it was a matter of, oh, that's a real mouthful. Oh, do you think he can never really live up to that? And I thought at the time that I thought it was a pretty good point of comparison. But, I mean, when you compare careers by the time they're all said and done, I have to believe Miguel Cabrera's career is going to be coming out looking even better than Albert Pujols. And he was thought to be, and for the people who discounted Barry Bonds and kind of saw what was driving that, and a guy with a hat size 5 times bigger than it was when he was in Pittsburgh, for the people who took Bonds out of the conversation like myself as far as best hitter of the first decade of the 2000s and thought that Pujols was the gold standard for that decade, it really says a lot about Miguel Cabrera, does it not, that he will probably end up passing him in terms of greatness for his career?
No question. I think among these three top guys, if they all stop today, I think you could already make the case that Cabrera is the first ballot Hall of Famer. As I talked about, seven times in the top five in the MVP. Now, Triple Crown winner, you know, I think he's done enough, but I do agree. Trout, obviously, only in the league 3 years. Kershaw has to do some more. But I do think, and as for Bonds, you know, I know this is unpopular. I've made a case in the past for Barry Bonds to be in the Hall of Fame because if he had stopped playing baseball the year he took the first steroid, and it's very well documented in Game of Shadows. It was after the 98. He's jealous of McGuire and Sosa, and deservedly so, I thought, because they couldn't sniff him until they started taking steroids. But as you probably know, Bonds had won three MVPs and should have won four in a row. I thought that 1 year Terry Pendleton won because Bonds split the boat with Bobby Bonilla.
Right.
But he won three out of four, and every Hall of Famer, every person who's won three MVPs is in the Hall of Fame. And that's a glorious list. I can't even all off the top of my head, but it's guys like Yogi Berra and Campanella and Mantle and on and on and on. I mean, there's some. They're all in the Hall of Fame. I thought you could make a case for Bonds, but I totally agree with you. It's a decade of the 2000s. He should be discounted, and I do agree Pujols is the gold standard, and I think Cabrera is there already.
Yeah, and that is just truly amazing. And last note that I want to leave this on, the number one guy on our list, Clayton Kershaw. I always have to smile when I think back on this. One of our great guest moments in the history of the lounge, having on right about at the time of the 2000 National League Championship Series, one of our bigger guests that we've had, Tommy Lasorda. And I asked him a question, and I kind of intuited that Lasorda was too old school to go for the coddling kind of thing, that he would give me a real answer, and he did. And I was talking about that Clayton Kershaw, you know, in this championship series coming up against the Phillies, kind of reminds me of, you're going to kind of need him to go like Josh Beckett in 2003, right? He's a kid with a pedigree, but he's not there yet. He's pretty much just starting out, but you're going to kind of need him to be, you're going to need him to look like what he's going to become in a couple of years. And most other baseball people would have been like, well, that's too much pressure to put on a kid. And Tommy Lasorda's like, that's exactly right. That's what we need out of him. He's got to step up, and he's got to be that guy for us. So God bless Tommy Lasorda for giving me the sound bite there. But you could see even then, right, when he came up in 2009, you could see what he's going to become. And here we are in 2014, Steve, the full actualization of Clayton Kershaw. I don't want to say that he can't be any better than this, because you never want to put any limits on anybody. But as I said, this might end up being the flagship season of a flagship career and sort of the poster child for where baseball is right now. He just sort of epitomizes what every team is looking for to try to get over the hump.
No question. He certainly arrived. He got that $30 million a year contract, that if there's one guy in baseball who deserves it, Clayton Kershaw. And he also leads the majors this year with five complete games. I know that's nothing compared to the old days, the old timers, but understand the way pitching is today. So, yeah, Clayton Kershaw has already climbed that mountain. And if he gets the Cy Young Award this year, and he will, unless some drastic changes, I agree, Cueto is great. But if they're even, Kershaw is going to win it, and he will truly have arrived as one of the great of all time.
Absolutely. And for anyone wanting to check out this list, of course, it is available the same place you're checking out this show, the FDH Lounge Multimedia Magazine, the FDHLounge.blogspot.com. Want to thank you all for tuning in today. Thank you, Steve, for analyzing this for us. It has been a great pleasure to be able to sit here and go through the FDH MLB Top 30 for 2014.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, All Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Awkwafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.